a year and a half later, I was sitting on my couch at home and reading like the Grace magazine kind of thing, went to parents. And in there was a blurb from the president of the college saying, we need godly people who are in the business world to come back and teach our business students what it means to be a Christ follower in that world. And I knew it was me. I just knew it was me.
This is the Grace Story Podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Roger Stichter, professor of accounting at Grace College for 28 years. During his tenure, the accounting program has grown more than fivefold and earned national recognition for its graduates' CPA rate. Grace has graduated numerous high-grade winners by the Indiana Certified Public Accountant Society, scoring among the top 10 highest cumulative scores in the state. In 2020, Grace's CPA pass rate was ranked in the top 7% nationwide. In 2010, the graduating class's first-time CPA pass rate was in the top 10 among all schools nationwide. He continues to communicate with over 300 of his accounting alumni through monthly emails and been awarded the Alva J. McLean Award in Excellence in Teaching and the Indiana CPA Society Accounting Professor of the Year Award. He's also an author of several books, including his latest, The Principle of Maximums, Living with Enough to Give Away More. He was one of the earliest guests on the Grace Story Podcast. We were just talking about this, starring in episode 5 back in 2019. And as many know, recently announced his retirement from full-time teaching at the end of this year. Will continue on in a part-time capacity and enjoys, and will get to hopefully enjoy more biking, fishing, being outdoors, and kids and grandkids. Roger, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
We decided if you do this every 6 years or so, you might be in episode 200 something. We'll see.
Someday, maybe.
Well, you know, just reading this list of things you've accomplished and done makes me want to retire because I'm tired from all of that. So it's been a very full and fruitful career. How are you as you come to the sort of the end here, even in the last month or so of your full-time teaching career? What are some of the emotions? What are some of the things that you're feeling and thinking through?
Yeah, it's a great question. Spring A, so just a couple weeks ago, I taught the last section ever of financial accounting that I will ever teach. And it was emotional. Great group of students. I had two sections of financial accounting and just really enjoyed those kids. And it made me realize how rich my life has been here and being able to interact with people who are 18, 19, 20 years old and show them more than just what accounting is, but show them what it means to be a Christian first. And then whatever your career is, that comes somewhere down the line. It's not your first emphasis. And notice, again, that most of the students really grab a hold of that, appreciate the devotions and just all the different conversations we have in class about life and about politics even, and, you know, the stuff you're not supposed to talk about, politics, religion, and whatever. We talk about those things, and students really listen intently. And so I've been greatly blessed, and it was emotional, that last class, where I said, you know, guys, this is probably the last time I'll ever teach this topic. And I have mixed emotions, some good ones, others sad that this is the last time. So they responded very well. I have a few of them in managerial accounting this session. And this could be the last time I ever teach managerial accounting. So that's kind of the feelings that are going through my mind. But I still have sensed and told some people recently again, I just have a great deep peace about this. Feel like it's the right timing for some reason. Maybe God will point that out to me in the future and show me why he's wanting me to retire now, but just a really good deep peace about it. So no second guesses, no regrets.
Well, if you have any of those, let us know. But okay. You know, so go back to, you know, the beginning of your teaching career. You know, you taught at Grace, took a little sabbatical, you came back. What first got you into this profession of being a professor coming out of industry?
Yeah, and that's a wonderful story of God's timing and just showing me things I didn't know about myself. So I went to public accounting out of college. I loved it. I was good at it. Left that only because of the time it took away from family during busy season. And we had our first child, and I decided I don't want to just see my kid on weekends. I want to be able to actually be there to help support my wife. And so I left public accounting, went to Miller's Merry Manor as a made-up position. I've had a couple of those in my life where instead of filling a slot that somebody else vacated, I actually went in and created the slot. And that was the Miller's thing. Supported the controller, Rich Ritterman was his name, and a wonderful, godly man. And was able to build that position and kind of show my worth to the company. And so after 1 year, Rich, my boss, said, "You need to get your MBA." And being a first-generation college student, I'd never had that on my mind at all about getting a master's degree. So I told him flat out, I never want to go back to college. I mean, I never want to go back and get any kind of degree. Well, about a year and a half later, I was sitting on my couch at home and reading like the Grace magazine kind of thing, went to parents. And in there was a blurb from the president of the college saying, "We need godly people who are in the business world to come back and teach our business students what it means to be a Christ follower in that world." And I knew it was me. I just knew it was me. And so I said something to my wife, and she said, this is you. So I went back to my boss and said, "Okay, I'm ready to get the MBA." And so that led about a 5-year journey of going through MBA classes at night and, full-time work, high level, because I was controller of the company by that point. And it was a big company, over 3,000 employees, 30 locations. So I supervised 5 different divisions of the company. So anyway, it was a big job, but made it work and got to kind of 1994. My wife said to me one day, "I just really feel God wants you to finish your MBA right now." And I had more than a full semester of classes left. And I said something really kind of dumb. I said, "That's stupid." And so she said, "Well, pray about it." Those 3 magic words that I think are things we need to use more. She said, "Pray about it." So I did, and came to the conclusion that this was right. For some reason, God wanted me to finish my MBA and get it done as fast as possible. So I told my company that I'd have to go part-time. They didn't want that. Kind of like Grace, right? So told them, I said, "I've got to go part-time. I just really believe God wants me to finish my MBA right now." And at that point, which was interesting, they proposed giving me the CFO job. I was 35, big company. And here they lay this out in front of me. And that was intriguing, but I still knew I needed to finish my MBA. So that fall of 1994, worked on and finished my MBA, was part-time at Miller's as controller. They gave me great flexibility to do that. Kept me full pay, which was amazing for a family. Kept me full pay, full benefits, everything. But just as I got ready to start that last semester of classes, Grace College actually called me and said, "Hey, you've been recommended to teach a class." I think it was intermediate accounting. And would you want to do that? So I told them, "No, I can't really now because I have this deal with my company and it would be unfair to them if I took this on as well. But I really want to teach someday. So I'm interested in teaching a class at some point." And in that phone call, they said, "Well, that's interesting. We have an accounting position open. Why don't you apply?" And so I did apply, was offered the job in, November sometime to start in January. And then I knew why God wanted me to finish my MBA that fall. And so that's what got me here. Teaching is tremendously difficult at first. A lot of hours. I was probably putting in 60 hours a week or more and teaching four different preps at once. I actually taught, I think, 12 different preps the first 2 years. So it's kind of brutal. We don't do that to people anymore, but if anybody's listening out there and wondering what's this like, we don't do that anymore. We kind of work you in a lot slower.
A little slower.
But, yeah. But that was a brutal year, year and a half. And then 2 years in to my being at Grace is when our daughter Rebecca was born that spent most of her life at Riley. And then I knew why the timing was so crucial to do it then. So I got my 2 years in, had my classes kind of rotated. I knew how to teach each class. And then my life got turned upside down for a couple of years. And Grace was the perfect place to be during that time. I just can't think of a better place to be. And so God knew all that, of course, ahead of time. The key was my obedience in that, my family's obedience in coming. And that was hard, I mean, because I was making pretty good money as controller of a big company. The pay I was offered here would not pay our bills. We knew that, but decided to accept it anyway. And God always provided just enough so that we met our obligations. Not anymore. The first few years were pretty hard financially, but we had enough. And God brought us here to make it through that time with Rebecca.
What made Grace the right place for that challenging period of time through your daughter's illness? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Grace was much smaller back then. I think we had about 600 students, maybe, and maybe not even that. So everybody knew me. You connected really, really well with all your students because your classes were much smaller than today. And a lot of people praying, a lot of people encouraging. And Dave Plaster, who was the vice president of academic affairs back then, called me in one day and he said, "Roger, you take care of your family." He said, "Nobody is going to ask where you're at. So when you need to be gone, you're gone. I mean, do the best you can taking care of your classes and things, but we're not going to ask where you're at." And so that flexibility and that encouragement, and then people praying and students praying, and we'd get cards, notes, emails from people actually throughout the United States saying, "Hey, my daughter, son goes to Grace. I heard about your situation." And you know what? We had a situation kind of like that, and we're praying for you. And so just that support, encouragement, knowing that I didn't have to go to work every day if I had an emergency down at Riley, and perfect place. I just can't think of a better place to be.
So fast forward, and you know, you took a sabbatical and left Grace for a little bit period of time, and then came back. When you came back, did you envision yourself retiring from Grace? Was that your intention at the time? And when you said, you know, "Hey, I'm going to come back to Grace and re-enter the field," what was your thinking? What did you hope that might look like?
Yeah, I think it was. So again, I left 2001, went to White's Residential and Family Services, now Josiah White's. It was the biggest child care agency in Indiana, Quaker background, so Christian organization, 250-ish employees. We serviced up to 160 kids on our campus that actually lived there. And then when I started there, we had 125-ish kids in foster care. And so as chief financial officer for that organization, I know CFOs get a bad rap sometimes, say, just don't spend money. But actually, I encouraged us to spend money on the foster care and try to grow it. And by the time I left there, we had grown to 300 and some foster kids. And it was an extremely profitable program for us back then. And so I really believe God took me there at the right time to help grow that company and be able to put money away. Because after I left, a few years after I left, the state changed the reimbursement system and actually cut reimbursement so much that everybody was forced into losing money. And White's had enough money set aside that they have made it to today. So finally, 2025, it looks like Whites is going to make money again. So a long period of time there. Wasn't just 7 years of plenty. It was a few more than that. And it wasn't just 7 years of famine like Joseph had. It was way more than that. But Whites made it through. And as I look back, I was privileged to go there and be a part of that to keep Whites going, which is a wonderful ministry. A lot of kids come to Christ through that time. And so when Dave Plaster contacted me every year and asked me to come back, and I'd say no. Finally, the third year, I had read Good to Great by Jim Collins and had applied that book to myself instead of just the company, and realized that my sweet spot was being an educator and being at a college and being an educator, as long as I could make the economic engine part work. And so I told Dave, I said, I want to come back, but you got to pay me X amount of dollars. I had six kids, and I actually told him, I said, it's not your fault I have six kids, but it's my reality, I have six kids. And if I don't get enough pay, I'll end up having to leave again. And right now I have a great job, great company. I believe in the mission. They love me. I'm not going to leave just to quit Grace again. Yeah. So having said that, I really truly believed if I came back, I was here until I retired. And that's what's happened. And I'm really glad that I've been here that whole time.
Yeah, I think a lot of times we think that getting into our sweet spot professionally is sort of God's expectation and obligation for us, but his expectation and obligation is to, you know, follow his will. And if we get that too, that's a bonus. And what a bonus, you know, for you to be able to have that opportunity to be in your sweet spot multiple times, whether it's been here or other companies. As you look back, you know, the accolades have been significant for you individually, certainly for your program. You know, a reputation has been built for the business school, often on the back of the accounting program and its success. You know, what do you hope your legacy is? What do you hope your alumni are saying about you 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now?
I really haven't thought about that much yet. I truly believe, though, that our reward is people and the people that we are able to impact. It's certainly not money. I mean, I've kind of written about that. It's, you can't take that with you. And
Principles of Maximums, you can look it up on Amazon.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Help fund Roger's retirement. You know.
Yeah. I doubt that would happen. I realize as an author,
might get either, you a burger at a McDonald's,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you make it big or it trickles in. So, but part of why I wanted to come back is because there's a lot of young people today that I think feel kind of lost in our society. And I'm not blaming churches, but I think there are some churches that just try to do fun things with their youth group, and they don't really give them the meat that they need. And so part of what I always wanted to do was to give them some meat. Of course, we taught accounting, but that was never the most important thing for me. The most important thing for me was to help them see that God's calling them into a place where probably there are few or maybe none, no Christian people. And the way they get into that place is through accounting and their degree. And so once they get there, part of what we teach is that you need to work hard. Whatever you do, you work hard at it. Doesn't mean you have to be there a long, long time every day. That's not working hard. Working hard is being focused and engaged, being the best you can be at your job, whatever it is, and showing that you're valuable. And so then when people start to see you're different, when they realize that you're a different person than they are, because accounting is a hard-working, hard-drinking profession a lot of stress, so taking alcohol, a lot of people do. So when they see you're different and that you work hard, they will respect you, and then you can have those conversations. And so being a witness for Christ, wherever you do, and this applies to marketing and management and all the other, you know, medical professions, everything else, but mine is accounting. So we try to teach them, that's why God has you here. It's not just so you can make money. And making money is not bad, you know, make all the money you can. Hopefully you give most of that, a lot of that away. But being out there and being a witness for Christ is what's important. So our program's always been hard. I've never cut it back because students have changed, and they have changed. I mean, students have changed, but I've never really cut the homework and the requirements because of that, because I know it's most important for them to learn to work hard and to gain the ability to learn better than it is their grades or making the program easy or trying to just get them through. That's not success. Success is helping them learn how to work hard, so when they get out, people will listen to their witness. So that's kind of always been the big part of the program. I mean, the nice thing about the program has been, some smart people have been drawn into it. We train them well, they study hard, and they get some awards because they've passed the exam well and gotten some high marks on the exam. That's just a bonus.
That's the bonus, not the goal. Potatoes.
Yeah.
I was talking to one of your alums, and I shared this with you before a couple weeks ago, who is the CEO of a publicly traded company, came through your program, been really impressed with their bold witness for Christ in that public venue, in certainly a geographical context where, in a company context where that's not the norm. Sent their kids to Grace, a couple of their kids to Grace, and just sort of asked, like, why are you staying engaged and involved? And the response was, you know, I could not have gotten a better preparation for the job I'm doing now anywhere else than at Grace. And he was speaking to both the, you know, professional preparation in accounting and, more importantly, the character development, the values, the biblical application, the sure footing for life in that sort of place. So I'm not telling you what kind of legacy you want to leave. I'm telling you the sort of legacy you did leave, right? It's not just people learning something, but it was being able to live something bigger and more important, and that's, you know, God's word and God's purpose for their lives, regardless of where it takes them.
Yeah, and one of the things that I truly believed is that my job, if you call it that, didn't end when they walked across the stage in May. It never ended. It just was beginning. And so the connections where I send them emails, and actually just this morning before I came here, a grad who's been communicating back and forth with me a little bit, he said, I can't wait to read the email about your Turkey trip. So I just got back from Turkey over spring break, and he's just saying, I want to hear about that trip. That is so good for me to hear. And so many grads will tell me, I just can't wait to read your emails. I always read them, and they are always meaningful. And so that's what I want, is that continued connection. That's probably been one of the things I've been trying to figure out with retirement, is what's that connection going to be like when I no longer have an office here. My wife and I have talked a little bit about it, because I do send Christmas cards every year to them. That's getting expensive, and the stamps cost hundreds of dollars at this point to send all the cards out. But grads have told me they look forward to getting that card every year, and I always put a half-page thought in it that honestly is just kind of comes off the top of my head. I don't like plan. I just sit down and start writing, and it just seems to come together. And the last one I did this last Christmas was about how I had this deep peace with the retirement issue, and how that's what God wants in us. That's why Jesus came, to give us that kind of peace. So I sort of tied that into Christmas thing. So that's part of what I've always wanted to do, is stay connected. Going to lunches, that kind of happened. I don't know why that happened, but we go to like 3 or 4 different locations in the summer and have lunches with accounting grads. Yeah. And they show up. I mean, there's a bunch of them will come. Sometimes I haven't seen a person for, 10 years, and they show up. And other times they come every year to that lunch. So connecting with me, connecting with other accounting grads that are older or younger, has been one of the things I think God has done through me. So that one's hard to think through. What am I going to do in 2027?
Hey, I'll make the commitment right now to pay for the Roger Stichter lunch roadshow, okay?
Okay.
So it's on the podcast. I can't take it back now.
Well, I'd love to stay connected. I really would. And yet I also want these people who have felt connected to grace through me to start to feel connected to grace through other people, you know, whoever takes my place. So I'd like to facilitate that as well. And so part of that we have to figure out.
Yeah. What I think is special is you weren't doing that in order to get anything. You weren't doing the postcard. You weren't doing the lunches for what you could get, but because you cared. Yet on the flip side, right, we now have the Roger Stichter Endowed Professorship funded by many of those grads who showed up at those lunches and received those postcards out of a gratefulness for what you've done for them and a desire to see a next generation of accounting grads prepared well to continue to make a difference for Christ in the field. And so that that's a legacy that will live. Thank you for what you have contributed and gave and continue to contribute and give. And one thing I know and appreciate is, you know, you're going to run across the finish line, not limp across it. And, you know, we are appreciative of what you have contributed. And it's awesome when, you know, the product you make is out there making a difference in the world for Christ. So thanks for your investment.
Well, thank you. It's been a privilege. I've thought about that a lot. Not many people get the chance to be a teacher, and not many people does God give the giftings to that fit kind of together well. And one of the things, again, I didn't expect, my wife last night, we just got back from Turkey Sunday, we're still jet lagged. And last night she said, I don't really get an opportunity to see you teach. I know you do it in your classes and do devotionals. And so she got to see that in Turkey. And she said, that was really cool. Mm-hmm. And I saw how people responded to you that way. And she was just really affirming. And so what a blessing. I mean, to be able to use the giftings God's given me to connect with this age of person. And it's been my joy.
Well, thank you all for listening to the Grace Story Podcast. Thanks, Troy and Rick, for producing it. And if you would like to share it with others who would benefit from this inspiring story, please do. If you have a comment, question, or you want to get connected, reach out at podcast@grace.edu. Don't forget to go buy Roger Stichter's book online. It's a great one. And until next time, live your best Grace Story today.